to Week in Review, where we recap events and issues pertinent to Central Illinois. I'm WMBD Radio News Director Will Stevenson. Peoria Police Chief Eric Echevarria is angry after a suspect police arrested this past week after, among other things, allegedly pointing a gun at an officer was released from jail. It's the latest bit of anger placed after lawmakers in Illinois approved what's called the Pretrial Fairness Act that eliminates cash bail in the state and was supposed to be replaced in part by a determination on the danger to the community a suspect might pose. Echevarria held a very brief news conference this week on the issue.
I'm going to give you a timeline of what occurred, and then I'll make some other statements. And the reason you're here, not sure if you know exactly what. On 3/18 at 4:55 a.m., the Peoria Police Department initiated a traffic stop on a black 2022 Honda Ridgeline in the 1900 block of West Star. The vehicle fled from officers for several blocks northbound on Western Avenue. The vehicle then pulled into the parking lot of 614 Northwestern and stopped. The officer made contact with the vehicle and ordered the driver and sole occupant, identified as Brian R. Childers, born in 79, out of the vehicle. He refused to comply, and he pointed a handgun at close proximity to the officer before fleeing again in the vehicle. Officers lost sight of the vehicle at that time. No gunfire was exchanged during this incident. On 3/18 at 10:25 p.m., our officers located Childers in the parking lot of the Paradise Hotel. He refused, again, to comply with officers' orders for several minutes while being ordered to the ground at gunpoint. Childers was eventually placed under arrest and was found to be armed with the same handgun that he pointed at the officer during the earlier incident. The handgun was loaded and was being carried on his person. He was also in possession of a small amount of methamphetamines and several thousand dollars cash at the time of his arrest. There was also a small amount of methamphetamines located in the hotel room where he was staying the past few days. On 3/19, that's yesterday, right? At 6:24 p.m., he was released from the Peoria County Jail by court order with a GPS ankle monitor. And that's why we're standing here today. It is beyond belief and beyond me how our judges can release somebody who has pointed a gun at one of my officers, right? What is the message that we're sending to our community when somebody can point a gun, not just at somebody in the community, but let alone a police officer in this community who is tasked with keeping this community safe? The officers you see behind me, they come in here every day to work hard to keep this community safe. And I am completely disappointed in the decision that was made to release Mr. Childers on the GPS ankle monitor. Highly disappointed, right? And I'm done just standing here and letting this continue to happen where people get arrested and they get released, right? What is the message that is being sent to our police officers? I have 218 police officers who come here every day again to work hard. Do you want our officers to sit back and not do anything? I don't think so. I don't want that. You don't want that. The citizens of the city don't want that. What are you telling our community members? That's the question that I think everybody needs to ask the judges. And let's what is the standard? What is the standard to detain somebody? Because just February 2nd of this year, one of our local judges was threatened via a phone call that was intercepted from the jail, from the Peoria County Jail, and this person made a threat about one of our judges. This person is unarmed. This person is in custody already, yet he's detained. I have a person who points a gun in very close proximity to one of my officers, and we release him on a GPS. What is the standard? That's what I want to know. What is the standard? I'm upset. If I sound upset, it's because I am upset. The community deserves better. Our police department deserves better. Again, I'm very proud of the men and women in this police department. They could stop. They could say, I'm not stopping no more cars. I'm not doing that. But I will tell you, I listened to the radio last night. I've listened to the radio today. Our officers have not stopped. They continue to do the job that our citizens have requested of them to keep Peoria safe. And I know and I trust that they'll continue to do that. But this has to stop. This has to stop. We are no longer going to take the blame at the police department for people that are being released. We are not releasing them. This is inappropriate, and it has to stop. We have an unaccountable party here, our judges. I'll take some questions.
You are upset at the judge, obviously, and you feel that it's not fair. But at the hearing, the judge listed a bunch of things, and the state got its chance to make its case for how to hold him. This is how the new law works. What would you propose be done when the law was followed the way it is supposed to be done?
Well, I don't know if it was followed the way it should be done, right? State's attorney is appealing that judge's decision as we speak. You got a question.
Okay. In terms of the appeal, is there other evidence of what he did? First of all, why did you guys try to stop him in the first place?
At this point, I think why he was being stopped at this point becomes irrelevant at the time where somebody points a gun. The question is here. The statement is he points a gun at one of my officers, right? That's what I'm concerned with. You don't have the right, and you can't point a gun at our officers. I want people in the community to understand that as well. This guy may have gotten off on the GPS, but we're not going to tolerate anybody pointing a gun at anybody in our community, let alone somebody pointing a gun at one of my officers. Your question.
It sounds like you have issues with the judges, but you also have an issue with the cashless bail system. Is that correct? All right.
Well, I don't want to get off on some other topic. Right now, the topic at hand is the issue of a subject being released after they pointed a gun. Yet, just a month ago, we have somebody that makes a threat on a phone from a jail, unarmed, on a local judge, and they're detained. What is the standard? There is none. Let's make things equal, right? Our community wants equality. We want some equality. Give us a standard, right? There wasn't no standard here. There's no equality, right? One person gets one thing and somebody else gets another. I will tell you what, I'm going to defend our officers. Every day they go out, they put this uniform on, missing holidays, missing family, all the things that police officers deal with, the stress of this job, understaffed, a lot of calls, and yet they continue to go out. The officer did not have to make that traffic stop that night. Officer could have sat somewhere. Officer could have been hanging out in the station, could have been doing whatever. No, he was out here patrolling the streets of Peoria while everybody else is sleeping, right? Making sure that you're safe, that our community is safe, that you can get up in the morning and live your life safely. Yet, he gets a gun pointed at him, and the guy gets released. Thank you. I'm not taking any further questions.
Peoria Police Chief Eric Echevarria. Brian Childers is scheduled to be arraigned in Peoria County Circuit Court May 2nd. After months of controversy spurred by allegations of financial mismanagement, Peoria Public Television Station WTVP has a new leader. The Board of Directors for Illinois Valley Public Telecommunications Corporation this past week voted to approve Jen Gordon as the next CEO of WTVP, effective about a month from now. This comes as the station continues to be in the middle of an investigation of the use of station finances by late former CEO Leslie Matuszak and ousted CFO Lynn McLaughlin. A board of virtually all new members has been seated. Julie Sanders was named interim station manager, and after a search, Gordon was hired. Here's Board Chair John Whelan, Board Member Heather Achera, Board Member Dr. Andy Chu, and Jen Gordon.
Jen is well known in the nonprofit world in Central Illinois, as she was the executive director of Arts Partners of Central Illinois for 7 years. This past year, she had an incredible impact as the executive director of a staff of over 20 at Grace Presbyterian Church. Before I bring Jen to the podium, I've asked two of the search committees to just make a brief comment. I'll start with Heather.
I would just like to express my excitement at this choice and that Jen has accepted this position with us as CEO of WTVP. I think we're extremely fortunate to have a candidate with such a wonderful combination of business acumen, commitment to the arts, and a profound interest in building up people and making teams operate very functionally to the benefit of the organization. And I think that those qualities are going to lead WTVP to have a tremendous impact on the community as well.
Thank you, Heather. Andy?
The community has several crown jewels, and actually some of them are represented here today. The symphony, the museum, and WTVP are crown jewels, and these crown jewels need to be cared for and nurtured and grown for the next generation, for our community. And I think we really have found no better person to care for WTVP well into the next generation than Jen Gordon. And so all these conversations that sometimes happen in the community, who are we going to pass the baton to? Who is up and coming? We are very proud and lucky to have Jen Gordon as our representative for the crown jewel of WTVP. And the last thing is to make sure that let's rally around our community. Let's rally around WTVP. Join, come back on board, and watch.
So without further delay, I am honored to present to Central Illinois the new CEO of WTVP, Mrs. Jen Gordon.
It is an honor and a privilege to be here today to accept this incredible post. I can't tell you how honored I am to be able to take WTVP into the next generation. As a mother with three very young kids, I can tell you that the mission of WTVP is near and dear to my heart. Today, we have limitless access to a lot of content, but very little of that content is quality. And WTVP brings us quality content and local quality content that informs, educates, and inspires, and it's a wonderful thing to have. When I turn on Passport and when I turn on WTVP and when I turn on PBS, I don't worry about what my kids are going to see. And I enjoy it, and I love it, and it's so great. So I can't think of a better mission to be a part of, to champion. And any of you who know me in this room know that I love Peoria. I think next to John Morris, I'm Peoria's second number two champion. And it has been an honor over the last 9 years to get to work with the wonderful crown jewels, as Dr. Andy Chu said, the wonderful local nonprofits, the wonderful arts organizations, the wonderful cultural resources that we have that make our community something special. As I think about the future of WTVP, I am so excited about what's coming. We are at the precipice of something that I can only imagine what's going to happen in the next 5 years, because we have something that maybe WTVP hasn't had. Momentum. This is a time for our community to re-engage and re-experience and experience for the first time this incredible asset that Peoria has. I hope that this press conference alone inspires people to take the survey, to let WTVP know what you love about the station and what you want to see them do next, and also to sign up and become a member. We have an incredible obligation to caretake and to steward well the wonderful things that help Peoria to thrive and Central Illinois to thrive. And WTVP is one of them. I am so honored to have had the confidence of a unanimous vote from the board. And I appreciate all of the work that this board has done to set up a strong launch pad for WTVP into this exciting new chapter that we're about to embark on. I also want to thank the incredible staff at WTVP who has kept this resource alive and going. And I cannot wait to get here and to start working with them. I just also want to tell you from the bottom of my heart, I am here for the long haul. My husband and I moved back here from New York City 9 years ago, and we have never looked back. Central Illinois is the place that we came back to raise our family, to participate in the community, and to enjoy everything that Central Illinois has to offer. So being here for the next, let's say, 20 years is something that I cannot wait to do. This is going to be a great time for WTVP, but what we need right now from the public is for people to tell us their thoughts. This is going to be a season of listening, it's going to be a season of innovating, and it's going to be a season of community. WTVP getting out into the community, and the community getting into WTVP. I understand we have time for a few questions, so I'd love to take those at this time. Great question. So I, if you know me and if you know my past experiences, I tend to be drawn to organizations that have a lot of potential, but perhaps have recently gone through times of crisis, or even internally or externally, there's something that's amiss. It's a big challenge that needs some sorting. That's something that makes me lean in. And obviously, this is the case of WTVP, so that is one of them. The second is also that I am a mom, and I do really genuinely care that this resource does not go away and that it continues to be available for my children and my grandchildren. I would say the turning point for me was when we saw, the community saw a new board step into place. I think everyone in the community thought this was really turning the new page for WTVP, and it was an opportunity for us to move forward with a fresh start. As someone who's worked with a lot of boards, I also saw that as an opportunity for me to, maybe a sign for me to lean into this opportunity. Absolutely. So this is going to be a season of transparency, and as I said before, listening. So both internally, I had the opportunity to meet with the staff earlier today, and it's going to be a time of listening to staff members and really working on transparency from the inside out. So we want to model to the community what we want the community to perceive of us. And so it's going to start internally. And then secondly is to make sure that the community is having a voice and they feel like they have a voice into what happens here at WTVP. So it starts with an invitation. The next 6 months is an invitation for the community to raise their voice, and I hope also their pocketbooks, so they can, or their credit cards, so they can really speak into the future of WTVP. This is a time for listening. Yeah, absolutely. I start on April 22nd. It's going to be my first day, boots on the ground, and my very first priority is meeting with the staff and working with the staff and making sure that we are a cohesive team. Oh, lean in and start watching because great things are coming. I mean, another amazing bit of work that this new board has done is to pave the way for some restored faith in those financial losses. So I would be remiss to say that the board acquiring that $1.2 million in pledges to address some of that financial loss didn't play a big piece in the confidence that I have stepping into this position. But as we move forward with any nonprofit, a nonprofit is going to live or die based on the enthusiasm and the support of its community. So it's going to be a time of getting the message out. I think, again, WTVP, it is a crown jewel of Central Illinois, and it also is a very easy mission to support. Anyone who hasn't downloaded Passport on your phone, you need to, because it's just a fantastic resource. And so I think we're going to see more community engagement and more people stepping up, more people becoming members for the first time than we've ever seen. And I think that is going to play a huge role in our finances moving forward.
The head of the Metamora Grade School District says he is thrilled with the passage of a tax rate increase referendum in Tuesday's primary elections this past week. Voters in the school district were asked to increase the maximum annual tax rate 52% to a rate of 2.31%. The referendum was passed with 70% voting yes. Dr. Ben Lee says the voter turnout was humbling and encouraging to see and credits a team effort in getting it passed. Lee talked with WMBD's TJ Carson.
I mean, it was a humbling and encouraging feeling to see the great voter turnout, first of all, and then the overwhelming support for our referendum. I think that that was a statement that shows the community is ready, willing, and able to support our efforts as a school, and couldn't be more grateful for the tremendous amount of support that we had from so many people. And it was a great team effort. We had a lot of people working to advance the cause and to spread the word and educate the public to explain the root issue, and just couldn't be happier with the results.
For those that may not be aware, what is some background information on the referendum? Why was it needed? What would it have? What will it do now since it's been passed?
Right. So the issue at stake was that we did not have a competitive tax rate available to us in the education fund, which is the largest driver of expenditures for school districts, and we were 30%. Short in our adequacy target. And so we had been cutting all these positions and hours and reducing staff and still having to borrow money in order to make operations. And we were just to the point where at diminishing returns, it was not a sustainable path forward. And our goal was to pay off the debt and then move that tax burden to a more sustainable path in the education fund. And so what the referendum question allows us to do now is to raise the lid on the education rate. So instead of borrowing money for operations, we can now be able to not lose so much interest and fees in order to operate. Provide some financial wiggle room, but the Board of Education has been explicit from the beginning that the goal remains the same. We're still going to be positive stewards of the community's resources, and to build and maintain trust, that job stays the same. This just allows us to do so in a more fiscally responsible way.
When you say you were coming up 30% short, was that you needed 30% more money, or can you explain that in further detail?
Yeah, the adequacy target is what I mean, and the State Board of Education identifies an adequacy target for every school district in the state, and in order to meet our adequacy target, we should have around $10 million in revenue, and we only had received around $7 million with that. So we were having to fill that gap by borrowing money, and we were still short of that gap, so we were really doing more with less, which is not unheard of for a school district, but more so than usual. And it wasn't a really good return on the dollar for the taxpayers either, the way that we were filling that gap. So in the long run, this is going to provide a much more stable and fiscally responsible way to do business as a school district.
You mentioned not meeting that adequacy. How bad did it get for finances in the district that this referendum was needed?
Well, it got to the point where we had cut 10% of our staff just the last 3 years, and reducing costs in all departments and shaving hours down for support staff members and redoing job descriptions, cutting bus routes. And we were getting to the point where we were still going to have to absorb or reduce more staff, and it was already at a dire situation. We were already down to bare bones, so it was really going to start impacting the product, the academic product, and the community was clear in saying that we don't want to sacrifice that. We want you to be responsible and be good stewards of the dollars, but we also want to put Metamora on the map when it comes to being innovative and to model innovative teaching and learning.
How much staff had been cut, and how had it impacted all those education programs?
Like I said, 10%. We've had 10 staff members that had been cut over the last 3 years, and we had riffed five more teachers' aides as a precautionary measure for next year, but with the passage of the referendum, that gives us a little bit more wiggle room. And what that does is increases class sizes. It makes a less than desirable learning environment in many settings, whether it's in the core classroom or our art or band or choir classes. Everything gets more crowded, and it makes learning less personalized, and that's always a challenge. This will allow us to be more competitive and personalized in our approach to learning. And not only that, but it allows us to keep our extracurriculars as well. So extracurriculars and athletics, they're always in the spotlight when it comes to budget cuts. And so that was in jeopardy. And we're thankful that we'll be able to have that outlet for so many of our student athletes.
How confident were you that the measure was going to pass? We know there was some vocal opposition to it, but it passed pretty handily last night.
Yeah, it really did. And I specifically did not have a gut feeling. I did not. I was always told that your assumptions on how things are going to go are typically wrong. So I just decided I wasn't going to have an assumption. I was just going to let things play out. And I was confident that the team had done as much as we could, and we put our best foot forward, and we swung for the fences. And it's rewarding. It's humbling, like I said, and encouraging that we had such a strong measure of support. It's neat to see things come to fruition like that.
For those that may not be aware, now that the referendum has passed, what's the timeline? How soon, if it would be increased, would the tax rate be increased?
Sure. So any new money that the board decides to levy wouldn't be received until the following school year. So we're talking a lag in terms of any new money. But as we said in any of the informational sessions, the board has no intentions of levying that full amount right away. If anything, we will have a phase-in approach, and only depending on what the state does or does not provide, that will determine if we inch up a little bit of that new maximum rate or not. But that was important for the taxpayer to know, is that just because we're asking for this new ceiling doesn't mean we're going to automatically go up and ask for that top of that ceiling. So we still have some debt to pay off, and still going to be very cognizant of maximizing the resources and keeping the tax rate as steady as possible until that debt relief comes in the form of some tax relief. And then we will move that over to the education fund. So that's a long-winded answer to your question, but
I get it. If it does go to that full cap, what kind of impact would it have on the taxpayer, and how much additional revenue would you raise with that increase?
Right now, we're borrowing a lot of that money, and we're paying it off in bonds and interest, which is part of the overall tax rate for the taxpayer anyway. So after paying that off and moving it over to the education fund, the goal is that the overall tax burden wouldn't even be realized by the taxpayer, because their overall rate would be the same or close to the same. But instead of paying that off in fees and interest, that'll be over $1.4 million in the education fund, instead of losing so much of it and hemorrhaging that money in interest and fees.
Metamora Grade School District Superintendent Ben Lee with WMBD's TJ Carson. Governor J.B. Pritzker was in Peoria briefly this past week. The governor spoke to the attendees at the Governor's Conference on Travel and Tourism at the Peoria Civic Center and says tourism throughout the state has recovered quite nicely since the beginning of the COVID pandemic.
I will need that bat. I'm on my way to Springfield. right after this. 177 members of the General Assembly, we need to get that budget through. I am very grateful to be here. I love Peoria. I love talking about tourism. I love promoting tourism for the state of Illinois. And so this is maybe one of my best days being here with all of you. I do very much appreciate not only the gift, the award, but also the opportunity to meet some of you, to get to know you. And I have to say, you all do such a spectacular job. And I hear about it everywhere I go. So I just want you to know how positive a feeling it is to be among you, and also the reflection of the work that you do that I hear about everywhere I go. You know, after 5 years as governor of this great state, I am truly struck again and again by the challenges that we have overcome, all of us together. The tourism industry, perhaps more than any other, has seen dramatic highs and lows during the last 5 years. And that speaks volumes to the resilience and perseverance of every single person in this room and your colleagues around the state and who represent us around the world. Together, we've gone from a COVID-induced recession that caused the most difficult challenges that I think the tourism industry may have ever faced, or certainly in generations, to a recovery that is now shattering tourism records. Last year alone, I think you know, Illinois' hotel industry set a record of $5.5 billion in revenue for a total tourism industry economic impact of $78 billion just here in the state of Illinois. With our Middle of Everything campaign starring Jane Lynch, who is just as pleasant in person as she is in the ads, to the recently launched Real People, Real Stories, Real Outdoors content series, we are letting families and adventurers across the nation see how spectacular Illinois is. And with the tens of millions of dollars that we're investing in restoring the natural beauty and visitor facilities of Illinois' 69 state parks, the promotion of our fabulous culinary scene all across the state, and grants to our state's theaters and art scenes and our shopping districts, people across the region, the world, and the state and the world are heeding our call. Last year, 14 million more people joined us in the Middle of Everything here in Illinois, bringing our total visitors to 111 million people. And rest assured, we are not letting up on our endeavor. Just this month, I announced another $4.6 million in grants to 20 tourism organizations across the state. And that, of course, is in addition to the tens of millions of dollars in small business support grants that we continue to issue to support the industry directly, like festival grants and tourism marketing grants and incentive grants, international tourism promotion, you heard Route 66 projects, and of course, more than $2 billion of Rebuild Illinois funds for resorts and parks and roads and bridges that visitors are taking to get there every single day. And just last month, I designated the first 10 state cultural districts eligible for special funding to increase economic development in areas of historic significance. These 10 districts across the state recognize cultural enclaves and rich Illinois history that visitors deserve to have access to and enjoy. And next year, we'll designate 5 more, expanding the program's impact and investing in more communities and small businesses where it's needed most. Again and again, when I'm promoting Illinois to national and international leaders, I hear the same feedback from those who've recently visited our state. They say Illinois has some of the kindest and most decent and hardworking people that they've ever had the pleasure to meet. And every single time I hear that sentiment, I have to say I'm truly deeply flattered on all of our behalf, but I'm also not at all surprised. Just look around this room and think about the work that you do every single day. You all have met the moment, and you've gone above and beyond the call of duty to welcome visitors and make this industry and this state stronger than ever before. You are the best advertisement for our state. No matter how many dollars we spend on TV, it's your interactions with people, your staff's interactions with people that make all the difference. And of course, the people of Illinois interacting with visitors from other states and other countries. I have often seen, for some of you who spend time in Chicago, I've often seen a visitor who's, you know, looking at their phone or a map, an actual paper map, if anybody even carries those anymore, and I see them occasionally, where people are kind of turning it this way and that way, trying to figure out where they should go. They don't know which direction that thing is that they're trying to get to. And some kind person will just stop and help them and tell them, oh, you know, two blocks that way, or, you know, let me walk you there. That doesn't happen in New York. It doesn't. It doesn't happen in San Antonio. It doesn't happen in Florida. It happens in Illinois, and it happens everywhere in Illinois. It's the people of Illinois that really make such a difference. So thank you. Thank you to every person in this room and to all the travel and tourism professionals across the state of Illinois and who represent Illinois. Thank you for our the work that our Office of Tourism, Daniel and others, Adu, and to the DCEO director, Kristen Richards, for her steadfast leadership. We have amazing heights to reach. We're not there yet. I intend to be the biggest supporter and cheerleader of the work that you do. I'll continue to do that. I'll embarrass myself by telling you that when I came into office, I knew immediately that we needed to invest in tourism for the state of Illinois. I mean, it has the greatest return for the state, for businesses in our state, of almost any investment that we can make to promote our economy. And so I put everybody to work. We've got to start advertising and marketing our state and all the great things about our state. So people went back into a dark room at DCEO and came up with, you know, and worked with an outside firm and came up with a plan. And they came back with some commercials that they had put together, some ads that they wanted to show me. And they showed them to me, and they were, you know, you've heard the tagline, the middle of everything. And I thought it was just fantastic. So they're on the verge of putting these ads out, and it's late February of 2020. Do you remember late February of 2020? Yeah, being in the middle of everything was not a great tagline for February of 2020. So I'm only embarrassed that I approved the whole thing. I'm happy we didn't put any of those ads on the air at that time. But at the right time, I think we did, or at least I know we chose the right time to put them on. And truly, you all have made them successful. People are coming to the state of Illinois. It's the first time that I've ever heard of people saying, I saw an ad about coming to the state of Illinois, right? I mean, we all know Pure Michigan. We all know, you know, the ads that you hear for destinations across the world. But for once, people are really talking about, I didn't know Illinois had all of that, and I'm excited to go visit. So thank you for making that possible for everybody, and I look forward to being your partner in the years to come.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. By the way, he received a ball bat as a gift when he took the stage. That was the reference he made to the baseball bat at the beginning of his remarks. That does it for this edition of Week in Review. I'm Will Stevenson, WMBD Radio News.